Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
To all the early birds that catch the worm, those of you burning the midnight oil, and for those that just can't sleep, well, this program is made for you. Welcome on in and Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Cole Thompson in the driver's seat, getting you caught up on everything you might have missed, headed into a fabulous, fantastic, not feeble Friday morning action. 800-224-2004. That's the number if you want to dial on in, call in, give us your thoughts, your opinions. Are you a fan of Justin Fields? You ready to admit that you were wrong? Because I'm probably pretty sure that I am, but I don't know entirely just yet. That's kind of the problem of when you see a winning game. I want to know your thoughts, so call on in. 800-224-2004. You can follow me on Twitter, at Mr. Cole Thompson. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel, at Mr. Cole Thompson as well. If I get to 1,000 subscribers by November 1st, your boy here is going full Lex Luthor, Daddy Warbucks style, bald as can be. And I'm going to start my villain arc right here in the city of Houston, Texas. So go ahead and subscribe to the channel. Give us a follow on Twitter, at SportsMapRadio. You can download the Just Saying a podcast version of the show on YouTube, along with iTunes, Spotify, Audioboom, or wherever else you get your podcast listening systems. And make sure that you also download the Sports Map Radio app, carry us in your pocket throughout your day. That way you don't miss a second of all of our great local programming. The wonderful, delightful Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass producing. Fun final hour planned ahead. Dak Prescott is under pressure headed into this game on Sunday Night Football. The Dallas Cowboys aren't. No, the Dallas Cowboys, they'll be fine. But Dak Prescott is under pressure headed into this game. And that is something that we have got to talk about. Speaking of which, talking about, no more pressure resides on Justin Fields for the weekend. Now, moving forward, that's a whole different story. But the streak is over. 14 losses in a row, and now a victory. What does this mean for the future of the Chicago Bears? And what also does this mean for the future of the Washington Commanders? And let's also talk a little bit about college football. There are must-see games headed into this weekend, primarily up in College Station. What does a victory mean for Jimbo Fisher? But before all of that, each and every day at this time, we go around the NFL, breaking down some of the biggest storylines you might have missed, and we do so in 2 minutes or less, hence the reason we call this segment the 2-Minute Warning. Michael, go ahead and start that clock.
Miami's offense is keeping opposing defense coordinators up at night, literally. Ahead of a Week 5 matchup with the most feared attack in the league, New York Giants DC Don Wick Martindale gave personal insight into how difficult it is to plan for Mike McDaniel's Dolphins. After dumping 70 points on the Broncos, Miami had DC Vance Joseph spiraling and defending his employment. Ahead of their Week 4 matchup with the Finns, Bill, coach, and defensive play caller Sean McDermott joked about adding Usain Bolt to attempt to replicate the Dolphins' speed. Whatever Buffalo concocted worked. Miami was held to a season low 20 points and 21st downs in its first loss of the season. The Dolphins are fast and productive. Miami has the most total yards, 2,044. Through the team's first four games in NFL history. The Finns lead the league in points per game 37.5, total yards per game 511, and passing yards per game 334.3. On the ground, they pace the NFL with 176.8 rushing yards per game and 10 rushing touchdowns.
Well, my wife called me last night before she went to bed. Said she was worried about me. She said, "Are you getting any sleep?" I said, "Yeah, I'm sleeping like a baby. Every 2 hours, I wake up and cry and go to the bathroom and try to go back and get some more sleep." That's unbelievable.
Shut up! Is probably what New York Giants fans said in the great voice of Billy Madison. Because you want to know why? He's not wrong. That offense is very impressive. But you don't need to be telling your fans and reporters and everyone inside the locker room, we're in trouble. Oh boy, are we in trouble. And you're not wrong, you are. Trust me, Kayvon Thibodeau coming on strong in last week's performance is at least a step in the right direction against Seattle. Seeing what you have on the defensive line with the Dexter Lawrence is probably a positive. Maybe you'll get better play from a Deontay Banks, your first-round cornerback that was drafted out of Maryland. You have that. I'm not going to sit here and deny that. But you want to be able to say, oh, yeah, what they did against Denver, we're not like Denver. No, Denver, they're a dumpster fire. Denver's P.U. stinky. Mile High City, more like Mile High Miracle flopping losers. That's what they are. That's what you want to say. Because Buffalo last week held this team to under 30 points. And you're trying to do the exact same notion. That way you don't lose rapport and start off the season 1-4. Now what you're saying is, I had the game plan against Tua Tagovailoa, an offense that features a speedster in Devon Achane that can turn up field at any given moment. Not to mention what they have at wide receiver. I'm not talking about Tyreek Hill. I'm talking about everyone else surprising around him. And maybe a defense that can get a couple of sacks and maybe one turnover if Xavien Howard isn't busy going ahead and having baby mamas. Yeah, okay, that's where we're at.
All is not well in Pittsburgh. Certainly not after the Steelers were mollywopped by a relatively young Houston Texans squad in Week 4. The 30-6 loss was a continuation of Pittsburgh's offensive struggles, which have led to plenty of blame the fans and pundits directed at offensive coordinator Matt Canada. Running back Najee Harris isn't having any of that. It's not about blaming the coaches in his mind. In his mind, he believes the offense is playing soft. Approaching the first of their two annual slugfests with the Baltimore Ravens, the Steelers are in for an AFC North rivalry game in which physicality is a prerequisite. According to Harris, the Steelers haven't played like they'll need to against Baltimore over their 2-2 start, in which both losses to the San Francisco 49ers and Texans have seen them give up 30 points, answer with an average of 6.5 and largely out-muscled.
So, let's just get this out of the way. I don't disagree with what Najee Harris is saying. This has been a very soft offense. It also is a dumpster fire of an offensive line. You aren't able to run the football. And Kenny Pickett has struggled when trying to attack the middle of the field. He gets probably 3 or 4 great throws off per game. And then that's it. That's execution from coaching. The play calling is coaching. You know what you are and what you're not, and you're running the same thing out there. Chris Boswell is a longtime kicker. He has been a part of the Steel City franchise through multiple offensive coordinators. And after securing the victory against Cleveland, they caught him with a hot mic saying, yeah, this win ain't on you, bro, after Matt Canada was celebrating. Yeah, that's what everyone in Pittsburgh is saying right now. If you refuse to make those changes, guess what's going to happen? Your offense is going to be hindered by miscues, miscommunication, and lackluster offensive play calling. That's what you are. And unfortunately, as much as I do want to believe in Kenny Pickett, it's not that he is at fault because he is, and it's not that Najee Harris is at fault because he is. It's the fact that you refuse to make changes on the offensive spectrum. So I'm sorry. Like Pittsburgh, I don't think that they're going to win this week, and I don't think they're going to win because they're not the better team. In fact, they are the worst team. But as long as Matt Canada is calling the shots, they're going to end up like the Toronto Blue Jays. Disappointing and early exiting a game.
In the aftermath of a 70-point showing that had the NFL world buzzing, the Miami Dolphins offense was relatively held in check during a Week 4 loss to the Buffalo Bills. The exception was rookie Devon Achane, who scored two of the Finns' 3 touchdowns and ran for 101 yards on only 8 carries. It's been an illuminating two-game run for the rookie, one in which Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa believes the rest of the league has taken notice. Achane exploded like the rest of the Dolphins offense in a Week 3 70-20 win over the Denver Broncos. He scored 4 total touchdowns and put up 233 total yards. Against the Bills last week, he hit 101 yards rushing. Achane currently leads the league with 11.4 yards per carry. Yes, an eye-popping 11.4 yards per tote.
I mean, you guys see it. I think the entire NFL can see it. Dude's a special player. He understands ball like the back of his hand. And I think that is one of the coolest characteristics that I can say about someone like him is he's very soft-spoken, but he's very smart. very intellectual when it comes to the X's and O's, understanding where to line up, where he needs to be in the timing of the play and things like that. And, you know, I think that's something that needs to be said, because it's hard, especially being in this offense. So he's done a tremendous job, and, you know, I know he'll continue to work hard and continue to do all he can to help us try to win games.
Yeah, I got to watch Devon Achane for 3 years at Texas A&M on my Saturdays. I could have told you that this kid was going to be special. I didn't need Tua Tagovailoa to be that guy. I could have told you. Because when you have Olympic-class speed, not to mention the capability of having the size and skill set to quick cut and make defenders miss at the line of scrimmage and in the open field, that offers you something. And he's in an offense that basically is go, 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 and saying run, run, run. And he's saying yes, 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 and he's finding his way into the end zone. Guy has 6 touchdowns in the last 2 games. I'm very excited to see what he does this weekend. He may be the only person that can go toe-to-toe with C.J. Stroud for Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Chase Claypool's time with the Chicago Bears appears to be coming to a close. Bears general manager Ryan Poles used the past tense when speaking about the embattled wide receiver on Thursday, wishing Claypool luck moving forward via ESPN's Courtney Cronin. The Bears have yet made a transaction involving Claypool, who remains on the roster for the time being. Poles said that the Bears are taking it day by day to figure out where our next move is.
I just want to put this out there, and I don't mean to be rude to Chase Claypool, who hopefully can get the help he needs or go to the team that wants him. Justin Fields has 8 touchdowns against 1 interception. He's completing over 65% of his passes and has a pass rating of 123. He was the cancer in the locker room, okay?
You're listening to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
When a legend passes, you remember his name, and you honor him by securing a victory. 800-224-2004. Final score from last night's game in Landover, Maryland. Chicago Bears, 40. Washington Commanders, 20. What a way to remember the life and legacy of Dick Butkus. Now, don't get me wrong. They did not play like Dick Butkus. Mean, running machine, pedal to the metal, ball hawking, down to the nose, physical demeanor. They didn't do that at all. But they did get a victory in honor of the legendary Bear who passed away at the age of 80 right before the game. And you can take a lot away from this matchup from both sides. But let's start with the main thing. Justin Fields can be a successful quarterback in the NFL. Now, what that success means is completely different depending on the spectrum. Every quarterback is like a snowflake. They're all completely different. They have their strengths, they have their weaknesses, and there certainly are going to be facets to their game that really stand out and make them can't-miss players, and those that will hinder them in their success. The thing that you can say about Justin Fields, no matter what, is in the last 2 games, you have seen on display all those little tits and traits that made him a first-round pick and worthy of Chicago trading up back in 2021 from pick number 20 to pick number 11 to draft him before they ended up having the whole reset with all this nonsense. You did see that. The athletic traits, the physicality, the dual threat mobility, the scrambling presence, the arm strength, the accuracy even has been on point at times. You watched all that last night. And was it against a lowly defense that has been atrocious since really week 1's performance? Yeah, it was. And this is a team that very well could be 0-5 or 1-4 for that matter, because they played close against Arizona. They played close against Denver. I'm not disappointing in all of that. What I will say is that you are seeing the culmination of what Justin Fields can be when he's on his P's and Q's. And that's a positive here. That's the one thing that you hold your hat on if you are a Bears fan that doesn't want to give up hope just yet. This was a massive win for the Justin Fields stans. And I'm not a Justin Fields stan, but I'm not a Justin Fields hater. I just call it like it is. What we've seen against 2 lowly defenses is the capability of being a quarterback that does understand how to win in the NFL and have the grit and determination to hold things out. Back-to-back weeks, Justin Fields jumps out to a very early lead. And there were moments in both games where he had to come back and deliver strikes because the defense was failing on their side. You know, as much as we blame him for the interception in the fourth quarter, it was a horrendous throw, but your defense should have been able to get a key stop, and that's more so on Matt Eberflus not trusting your defense when you got a chance to kick a field goal, and instead you go for it on fourth and one. Like, that's on Matt Eberflus. That's not on Justin Fields. And then in this pass game, they jump out to an early lead. They look like they're about ready to contend and walk away with a huge victory. And then you watch as Washington continues to push their way back into the game. You see Sam Howell get a little bit lit. He looks a little bit like Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen. He's not Josh Allen, let's be real. He's more so probably like a Taylor Heineke mixed in with the Baker Mayfield with that mobility aspect and that mean green, going to actually hit you in the mouth type of mentality. But Justin Fields responds, and he connects with the number one wide receiver in DJ Moore, who is living up to the billing so far in the last few games of why it was worth trading for him and giving up that number one pick. And you see that rapport and that consistency that people were expecting in that jump from year two to year three, and really year two in Luke Getsy's offense. In the last two games, since Chase Claypool has been away from the team, the cancer in the locker room, and I put that actually in quotes when I shouldn't, he is a cancer. Look at what you've heard from him during his time when he was in Pittsburgh and how happy that team was when they got a second round pick in return. He's completed over 68% of his passes for 699 total, $699, my apologies. 8 touchdowns, 1 interception, and he has a 131 passer rating. That's huge. Not to mention, you're also seeing that chemistry build with DJ Moore that wasn't there throughout the preseason. Speaking of which, with DJ Moore, Carolina's looking for a number one wide receiver. I think you found him. You traded him for Bryce Young. That's what you did. And now you're banking on having to give up more draft capital when you had the guy from the get-go, and maybe you didn't need to go ahead and get Bryce Young to begin with. You could have gone with a different quarterback at 9, or maybe traded up to say like 3 for an Anthony Richardson, or a 2 or something like that. You could have done one of those things, but you didn't. Bygones be bygones. I digress in the situation. The version of what you got from Justin Fields last night is a huge positive for his tenure. But there is a caveat, and I only put this here because of I think that we have to be real for a second. The Bears still have the first 2 picks in the NFL draft. Carolina hasn't played yet, and they're 1-4. So they're the only team with 4 losses and 1 win as of this morning, and Carolina still has a shot to go 0-5 with a loss to the Detroit Lions. If you have a shot to draft Caleb Williams and you're firing Matt Eberflus, I think you take that deal. Even if Justin Fields ends up being the right guy and proving every single day that he is showing you what is capable when you give him time and when you actually allow him to do what he does best, I think that you move off of him. The good news is that you would be able to trade him for a high value in return, because there's always going to be a team out there that doesn't want to draft a rookie that feels like they can fix the final flaws in a player's game and thus give them the advantage in the overall deal. I mean, look at Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz was abysmal his last year in Philadelphia, and you still got a second round pick in terms with the Indianapolis Colts because they thought that Frank Reich could fix him. So it happens all the time in the NFL. That's a positive. And the other thing, though, that we have to say, which is important, he's looked good against 3 teams so far. The defense in practice, Denver, and Washington. Washington, Denver, and Chicago all rank bottom 3 in scoring. Not to mention, Washington and Chicago have given up the most yards this season. So when you do it against a really great defense, that's something I would hold my hat on. That's something I would say, okay, now we're actually watching Justin Fields work. So, great win last night. Good for the stands who do believe that Justin Fields is the answer and can be something moving forward. I just got to see a little bit more. And if I do see a little bit more, well, then you have a very intriguing conversation if you're Ryan Poles, especially when you have that number one pick or the number two pick again. Do I buy in? Do I trust that Fields is only going to get better and trade that number one pick like it did last year for a vet, but also exceptional draft capital moving forward? Or do I go ahead and cut my losses before it's too late? 800-224-2004. On the flip side, let's talk about what's going on in Washington. Ron Rivera's days are numbered. Ron Rivera at this point has got to be ready to fire up the resume, or probably more so at this point, I would go with firing up the golf cart and enjoying a sweet retirement out in Florida, playing golf, getting back nine in at, say, midday. That's what you probably are looking for. Because the game has surpassed him at this point when it comes to scheming purposes. And as much as a lot of people have around the league praised and loved Ron Rivera's demeanor as a player's coach, he no longer can justify that being the only reason why he can stay employed. And it ran him out of town in Carolina, and it's going to run him out of town in Washington. The difference is, with Washington this year, with new ownership, I honestly think that they're going to swing big. I really do. Because you know that Josh Harris is right now working with Philadelphia. And what has Philadelphia done the last two coaching hires? They went after Doc Rivers. And Doc Rivers was a shell of himself at this point, but he had a winning pedigree. He had been to multiple playoff appearances during his time with Boston. And then, of course, when he was with the Los Angeles Clippers. And he won a title in Boston. So you brought that championship mentality back to D.C. And then you just hired Nick Nurse. And Nick Nurse, at one point, was viewed as one of the more up-and-coming coaches. He won a title with Kawhi Leonard. And I thought the firing was absolutely asinine by Toronto. I'm going to be completely real with you. I thought that Nick Nurse was not the problem in the Great White North. And now, maybe Philadelphia will prosper, primarily if they get rid of James Harden and they get something in return that's probably going to benefit them for the foreseeable future. But if they get that, you already know that they're swinging big for the coaching hires. They're not settling for assistants or up-and-coming names. They want not only championship mentality, but they want proven vets who have done the job. And I think that that's what you hold on to when you are looking for the next coach of Washington. There are some young players that you can bank your hat on. There are some names that you can look at and say, we're not that far off from contending if we just make this change here. And if you're willing to spend the money and you're willing to go out and pay the price to get a premier coach, you will land somebody in D.C. And what's one thing that you can always know about championship-minded people? They want to be the reason that positivity is coming to a franchise. If the one caveat that you're looking at as a Washington fan is in this loss, Ron Rivera days, Riverboat Ron, he's betting on black and he's about ready to go out the door.
This is Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Sights are set on the Lone Star State in the world of college football for week six, and for damn good reason. 800-224-2004. You start off Saturday with a must-see showdown in the great area of Dallas-Fort Worth at the Cotton Bowl. Not only is everything fried up there, but also there is going to be a hot, steaming success story for Texas and Oklahoma in the Red River Showdown. We all know what this game means. Everybody knows what this game means. I've talked about it all week on this show. Whoever wins takes first place in the Big 12. That's a huge plus. But the other thing that really stands out with this whole matchup is it kind of justifies either the hiring of Brett Venables and giving him time to actually construct a roster in his image instead of just holding on to players that were left behind by Lincoln Riley when he shut ship late in the night to go out to Pasadena, California and be the next head coach of USC, or that Steve Sarkisian's culmination over the last 2 years has actually been building to this moment. Is Texas B-A-C-K-N-O-P-E? You got to do it throughout the entire year to be able to reach that type of standard. But the other game that's really important this weekend and has major precipice on the future of the SEC resides in College Station as Texas A&M, an unranked Texas A&M team, I might add in, takes on Alabama. And this can go one of two ways, in my opinion. The first is Alabama shows that they're still Alabama. Yeah, they don't have the same quarterback of old, like a Tua Tagovailoa, a Jalen Hurts, a Mac Jones even for that matter. The offensive play calling is askew, and it's not built up to the brand of what Lane Kiffin did or what Steve Sarkisian did. But it's still Ala-frickin-Bama, and it's Nick Saban. And you can't put the DOA on the body until it is completely cold. And as long as Nick Saban is running the show in Titletown, the body's never going to be cold. It may be on life support at times, but you'll see an uptick. You'll get that second wind. You'll get the adrenaline. And there we go. You're right back in the running. Or A&M actually lives up to the billing. It's always interesting when you talk to A&M fans because as much as I do believe the Aggies are improving, and you are seeing it this year, because the offensive has taken a massive step forward underneath new coordinator Bobby Petrino, and the defense has really culminated in its own since that week two loss to Miami. A&M kind of acts like the Dallas Cowboys. They always put the wagon before the horse. They puff out their chest because of great recruiting classes and because of the ambiance and the money and the athletic facility and the upgrades to the complex. They've done that. They've done that to a T. But they've yet to have a double-digit win season underneath Jimbo Fisher. And it would be one thing to say, okay, well, Jimbo Fisher, he's going into year three. That's not justifiable. It's year six. Every single player on this roster was recruited by him and his staff. Every single player that was added in by the transfer portal was selected by him and his staff. And the team just kind of puts the wagon before the horse, and then they fail to meet expectations. And Anaya Smith, who's been in the building since 2019, he has a relationship with Nick Saban because of his brother Maurice Smith. That's a very, very intriguing, conflicted, complex story. But when you think about it, he knows that Nick Saban is going to do everything in his power to win, but he said something this past week during his media press conference about how A&M is the laughingstock of the SEC. And for most people out there, you'd go, well, how can you be the laughingstock when Vanderbilt exists? How can you be the laughingstock when South Carolina has one great performance against, say, a Tennessee, and then they fail to meet the same expectations against a Florida? And then Florida hasn't always been great. And Kentucky has had some highs and lows throughout the tenure. The reason why A&M is the laughingstock, and I understand where it comes from, is because they act like they belong in that upper echelon category alongside the LSUs and the Georgias and the Alabamas of the world, and they're middle tier. They're not even at Tennessee level because of Tennessee's at least been in the SEC for 5+ decades, and they've been one of the pioneers, and they've won national championships, and they've handled their business for decades on end. And A&M is just entering year 11 with the conference. They came in 2012, and they've beaten Alabama twice, and they've only had a handful of successful games against LSU, and they haven't beaten Georgia. And so those are things that you look at. So I understand where Anaya Smith comes from. A win for either team is massive. It's almost exponentially crazy because the winner of this game firmly plants themselves in the driver's seat and an inside track to the finish line as the representative for the SEC West. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to win the SEC, go on to the college football playoff, and keep the dominance of SEC football championships residing alive and well. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that because of Ole Miss has already lost to Alabama, they would have the winning total. And as long as Alabama doesn't lose to, say, like an LSU or Tennessee, they would actually still be in the running to make the college football playoff. And the same thing kind of goes for A&M as well, who also plays those two teams plus Ole Miss. If they get wins over Tennessee, Ole Miss, Alabama, and LSU this year, their postseason hopes are alive and well. But a win for Jimbo Fisher is monumental in this game. It's honestly life-altering. And I don't like to speak in foregone conclusions, but I will say, when you hear about people talking with Jimbo Fisher this year, him being on the hot seat, and there's enough oil money in the world to be able to buy him out of his contract that is lucratively long, and he's one of the highest paid coaches in college football for lackluster, mediocre expectations and results every single season, a win would do three things. Number one, again, it puts you at the forefront of every conversation in the SEC West. Handle your business against Mississippi State. Do well against Ole Miss. Don't worry about what's going on in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And don't think about Rocky Top, Rocky Top, Tennessee. you are the favorites now to win the SEC West, and not only that, potentially be the dark horse to make it to the college football playoff. And yes, I do believe it is plausible. This time last year, TCU was unranked, and then they went on their epic run, and they didn't win the Big 12 title, but they were undefeated going into that game, and the resume spoke volumes, so they were one of the Final Four teams. A team that's unranked right now still can find their way into the Final Four. It's happened. There's evidence of it. But the second thing is Jimbo Fisher would become the first former assistant to beat Nick Saban twice. Kirby Smart's done it. Steve Sarkisian's done it. He's done it. He was the first to do it back in 2021 when Alabama was number one in the country and A&M was unranked. And they found a way to have Zach Calzada get the performance of a lifetime. Devon Achane, who's now tearing it up in the NFL and showing why he has that home run speed, ran back a 96-yard touchdown. Anaya Smith caught the game-tying score. And then Seth Small drained a field goal that had Kyle Field elated. Something that you care for and you love to watch in this sport. And it's why this sport is the most beautiful thing in all of the world. I truly believe that. I believe that college football is a cut above the NFL because of moments like this. And you get a second win at home. This is why you made the move if you were Ross Bjork to give the extension. This is why when Scott Woodward made that call back in 2017 to get Jimbo Fisher to leave Tallahassee, he's now firmly planted. You don't worry about those games against, say, a Mississippi State. You're supposed to win those ones. You don't worry about those games against Kentucky or South Carolina. You're supposed to win those ones. You're paid this type of money to win the games against the Alabamas and against the LSUs and against the Georgias. And that's where you actually can puff out your chest and say, yep, we do belong in that category. Yep, we do have the resources. And what's really interesting is that people are kind of underselling the loss to Miami. Like, Miami, they're undefeated. Has anyone ever thought that maybe Mario Cristobal turned back time and he brought a version of the 2001 Hurricanes to South Florida? Anybody ever thought that? Look at the offensive line. It's really damn good. Look at how A&M has responded in the last 3 weeks. Look at what they've done in SEC play. They're the best defense in the conference, not to mention they also have the most sacks, the most tackle for losses. They've done their job over the last few weeks. And if Jimbo Fisher gets a second win over Nick Saban, well, then again, it justifies the contract. You lived up to playing the big game. Now you have to handle business when you play in the other games, like against South Carolina, against Tennessee, against Ole Miss, Mississippi State. But you won the big game. That's massive. And the third thing is, as Oklahoma and Texas join the SEC, it keeps you ahead in the recruiting aspect of things. Because A&M went to the SEC back in 2012, and they had that big branding, that SEC logo. It just means more next to their name. They were able to persuade recruits, hey, don't go to Austin. Come to College Station. Come be a part of what we're building here. The tradition, the 12th man. We got something that Texas doesn't. And we have the SEC logo next to our name. That will help out when kids are deciding, I want to go to Texas. I want to go to Oklahoma. I want to go to Alabama. You keep them in state. I can't count out Nick Saban or Alabama just because it's Ala-freaking-Bama. But if Jimbo Fisher gets this win, if A&M once again unranked defeats Alabama, huge for the program's persona.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Saturday showdown in the likes of Santa Clara? I think that's right. Pretty sure it's in Santa Clara. 95% positive in Santa Clara. The Dallas Cowboys will have an opportunity to prove Jerry Jones right that the 49ers may be the favorites to win the Super Bowl. But they still got to run through Dallas. 800-224-2004. So for those of you that didn't hear on 105.3 The Fan, it's a big station out in Dallas. Jerry Jones, wonderful Jerry Jones, who loves himself more than he loves life itself so much that he made sure that even in the afterlife, he could still be a part of the Dallas Cowboys with AI technology being at the forefront, said that Dallas basically can hold their own against the 49ers. The 49ers may be the favorites, but they have to go through us, hopefully twice. And I understand where he comes from, and I understand that this is kind of a big game for multiple purposes, you know, for standing and recognition of where you rank among the NFC teams. I've already made this abundantly clear. I believe that San Francisco and Philadelphia are cut above everybody else. And then it's a race to number three. And right now, I would say it's only a two-man showing. Maybe you get a third team out of the blue that comes up. But it's Detroit and it's Dallas. And right now, based off what I've seen, because of how they've played in games, and the one loss that they did suffer was to a playoff-contending team in Seattle, I trust Detroit a little bit more. I don't think, though, this is a big game for Dallas. If Dallas loses, they still can get to 12-plus wins. They still can have a shot of winning the NFC East. There is an opportunity to where if somehow there's a faltering part to the Brock Purdy experiment in San Francisco, they end up getting the number one seed. It's not that big of a game for me. It is a big game in terms of standings, but persona-wise, I still am going to view them as the third best team on any given Sunday. As of right now, that's how I view it. But this is a big game for Dak Prescott. This is one of those matchups where it won't determine his overall persona. Nobody inside the building is going to go ahead and pull him aside and say, this is your last year. Thanks for everything you've done. Best of luck in all your endeavors. But this is a game to where I think that Jerry Jones and the Cowboys will have that harsh reality of understanding where they are with Dak. I have been a Dak supporter from the get-go. Anybody out there who talks about all these other quarterbacks about being on the high-end level, that Dak is not as good as them, yeah, okay, I get it. Dak still is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. And if you want to replace Dak Prescott in Dallas, here's my main question for you. Ready? Who is it? Who are you bringing in? Who's the guy that's going to be better than Dak for your team to get you over that hump and finally bring you back to an NFC championship game? Not even a Super Bowl, just an NFC championship game for the first time since 1995. If you got that guy lined up, signed on the dotted line, he's coming to Big D, go ahead. Sayonara, Dak. Best of luck to you. But for me, this game is more so about Dak's persona as a quarterback. There's a fine line of where you are with quarterbacks in the rankings. I say that Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins, and I'll throw Jared Goff into the mix at this point now because of what we've seen so far, they fall in the quarterbacks that won't be shocked if they win a Super Bowl. They won't be the reason you win a Super Bowl. You have to have a great defense. You have to have exceptional weaponry, a solid offensive line, great execution, phenomenal game planning, a potent run game, and a little bit of luck on your side. They'll be a part of the success story, but they won't be the reason for the Super Bowl. Josh Allen's the reason for a Super Bowl. Joe Burrow's the reason for a Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes is the reason for a Super Bowl. Dak Prescott's not. But Dak also, in the postseason, has had back-to-back games against San Francisco where he's lost. And he was a part of the problem. In 2021, remember that season? He completed less than 53% of his throws, one touchdown, one interception. He also rushed for a score, and they ended up losing. They play well against Tampa Bay the next year. What happens afterwards? Brock Purdy has a bad performance. The defense steps up. But Dak throws for less than 250 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions, and they're sent home packing another year away from being a year away. So for me, this is a big game for Dak because of it shows where you are as a quarterback. It shows I can get past my white whale. This is my Moby Dick. I can win that battle. If you win this game and you play well, it doesn't mean that you're postseason bound and that the Super Bowl is in your reach and Jerry will get to hoist up one Lombardi trophy before he starts looking up at us. So proud of you, boys. Won't mean that. But it will mean that Dak can be that reason for success. He can be a part of the element to determination and he can be one of your main focal points. And that's, I think, what you're taking away. For Dallas, this means nothing. Dallas still can hold their own destiny. Dallas still can find a way to make it deep into the postseason. And Dallas still can maybe win a Super Bowl at some point in their tenure. But with Dak, this is the big game. Dak needs to play well. Dak needs to silence the critics. And Dak so far this season has improved. He's taken steps forward. 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. He's looked good, cool, calm, collective in the passing attack. He's been that guy. Do it against one of the best defenses in the NFL. Do it against one of the best offensive schemers in the NFL. Show why that conversation of, oh, I would take Brock Purdy over Dak Prescott is nothing more than moronic people who have never played a down in their life. Do that. You do that, people are going to be eating crow on Monday. If you can't do that, people are going to be right about where you stand in the status of quarterbacks in the NFL. 800-224-2004. Okay, Michael. Last call calendar of the week. What we got?
We have 5.
So we have 5. We had 20. So 25. So now it leans back to me with the over-under. We were at 6.5. Now it's at 6. I'm winning now. Told you, Michael. I always come out on top.
We were at 5.5.
I hate you. This is why you...
No, we were exactly at 5. We divided 20-something 5, and then you said 5.
So today we're at 5.
Yesterday you said 5.
No, but today we're at 5, right?
We have 5 today.
So we're at 5.5.
I guess.
You're evil.
First one is National Coaches Day.
I don't care. You're evil. How dare you? How dare Michael Hernandez be right on my show? How dare he have the light and morals? You son of a gun. You're the worst. What'd you say, Coaches Day? We need coaches in life. I will say, I'm not one of those people who is into the life coaches thing. Have you heard about these people, Michael?
No.
So life coaches are people you pay money to talk positively to you. Oh man, I've had a bad day. Chin up, bud. You can do it. Don't worry about today. Tomorrow's a bright new one. It's all fine and dandy. Shut up. Shut up. You're doing that and stealing people's hard-earned cash. You're the worst. You're the absolute worst. Now, coaches in football and basketball and all those sports, we need them. And there have been coaches in my life that have been very exceptional into my building blocks in my career. So I'm thankful for them. So I'll give coaches at least an honorable mention potentially on the day show.
National Orange Wine Day.
Orange Wine Day? Yeah. Yeah. Dude, we don't need this. Just keep to the dope stuff, keep to the disgusting crap, and move on with your life. That's all you need. I know what wine tastes like. An orange zest to it is not going to make me want it anymore. In fact, it's going to probably make me want it even less.
National Body Language Day.
Does that mean like, hey, Michael. Michael, look at me. I'm not excited about today. Just, Or, hey, Michael. Michael, hi. How are you? Are you excited? You want to go outside and play? I'm a golden retriever. I'm like golden retriever energy. No, because body language doesn't tell me everything. Like, I've seen people who are very excited and depressed as all hell inside, and then people who are sluggish are like, dude, I slept wrong on my back. Leave me alone. Okay, that's cool. Bye-bye.
National Manufacturing Day.
I have no idea what that means. I don't care to know what it means.
And Noodle Day.
Noodle Day? We're talking like noodles.
Noodle.
No. Are we talking like water noodles? Like the one that you you're on when you're
just noodles.
So the pasta.
I guess, yeah.
Oh boy. Oh boy. I am a pasta snob. I am. I love me some good pasta. I don't eat it often because I'm trying to cut down on my weight. I look good, don't I? I think I look pretty damn good right now. But I will chow down on some ramen. Ramen is my go-to, and I know it's got all the saturated fat, it's got all the sodium in it, I don't really care. Ramen is delicious, and it is a meal that I have enjoyed since I was in college. I still eat like I am 21, and I'm about to be 29 plus one. So you know what? I hereby decree National Noodle Day. Whether you're into pho, whether you're into soup, whether you're into noodles, whether you're into pasta, linguine, Alfredo, rigatoni, whatever it is, enjoy that carby intake that fills up your stomach and makes you feel delightful. And also a little bit sleepy in the process. We all could use a little bit of sleep these days. That does it for me here on Just Saying It. I will be back on Monday getting you caught up on everything we might have missed throughout the weekend. College football, NFL, and a bunch of other things. It's Cole Thompson with Just Saying It, signing off. See you next time, folks. Later!